forgive me if I'm not 100% into the machine. Okay, well, Alan, thank you so much for that offer. You definitely have made yourself a new friend. Wow. And, yeah, it's a very exciting conversation. You know, I came back wounded with the failure of my experiment and highly motivated because I saw that there were stations all over who would be very happy to talk to me if my antenna worked. And so I'm highly motivated with making an antenna work well. So, again, thanks very much for, I guess you're probably right, rummaging for maybe some tendencies or something like that is the system data you're looking for. But, and yeah, I kind of like the idea of that the laptop or the netbook computer would be able to drive that small vector network analyzer. So I think that's a pretty good situation. So I guess Alex is probably running around in his basement. I think it was K2IO. We'll give a pause for Alex, but otherwise you pick it up, please.
Guys, I think we may have to go help Alex put a radio in his basement. This is, what, his third trip down there this afternoon? Alan, you're as the physician in the group here, can you prescribe this as exercise for him to run up and down the steps? I'm hoping he doesn't have a three-story house. I know he lives in an old classic-style house, so he may be up in the third floor. This could be three or four flights of steps for him. Over to you, Alan.
I didn't think of that. Yeah, that's what Alex is doing. He's actually he's exercising while we're on the radio. That's a very good point. Yeah. Well, I was thinking maybe he should just keep a walkie-talkie on his belt, and then he can transmit from there. I'm only concerned he's going to go into the basement one day, and he's never going to come back to the radio. And then I'm going to wonder, you know, should I call the local police or ambulance to get him out of his basement? I don't know. Very funny. Very, very good, Bernie. Anyway, I'm going to have to start shutting down here because I'm going to have to start thinking about dinner. And I do have a dinner date tonight, so I have to take care of that, get ready to go. I have to be there by about 7:30. But I have enough time for one more go-around, but... like I said, I will. I'll email you both with the information, and then we'll find some time and get together, and we'll play around with it. And could always order in a pizza pie. That always makes it interesting. Anyway, I'll throw it over to you, to Ray. I'll leave a pause for Alex, and if not, then you pick it up.
Okay. Yeah, okay, thank you very much. Yeah, I'm not sure I ever tried that AWRL link. I never got any email that way. My email's in the Linemark roster, so maybe that could work. Either or I'll try to send a message to you via the AWRL link, and we can make the connection that way. So, yeah, okay, fine business on needing to go and take care of things. And, yeah, I'm getting some, I've been trying to prolong the conversation here with my driving. I'm getting to some roads I don't think I've been on for a while. My wife's saying I've been here. Yeah, it looks different. Okay. Anyway, so, I guess we'll give a pause for Alex, and other than that, K2YO, you pick it up. 33, Alan, it was really good getting to know you better, and, yeah, it'd be nice to have a friend, to experiment with antennas. So, take care.
Alan, when you get a chance, check out QRZ.com. That's kind of the universal place for picking up ham emails. You can't get them unless you register with your call sign, and I believe there's a way of tracking it. So it's a pretty safe way to post your email for other hams to find it. I don't have an AWRL address, but I do. My email address is linked on QRZ. When you go to K2IO on QRZ, it's there. So very cool. Yeah, this antenna experimentation stuff is, to me, seems extremely cool. I've heard Dick talk about it on the net, that he has a basically an anechoic chamber built in his office, that he found the RF hot reflective surfaces and covered them with something that wouldn't be reflective, and he can model it. He's got an antenna range in his office, which, you know, he probably has a decent-sized office or like a conference room table, and the kind of frequencies he's dealing with, you don't have to get, you know, hundreds of yards away. A few feet makes a difference, but I always thought that was so cool. He's got his own antenna range. Over to you, Alan.
KC2RF, and I'm going to just drop see if Alex is back up, or should I call the police? You know, we're going to get him as one of those help, I've fallen and I couldn't get up type things. Might feel better that way. But hey, Alex, are you back? Man, that guy must have a big basement. Anyway, yeah, I know I'd heard Dick talk about his little antenna range that he has at work. That was something that inspired me to do something like that in my own house. I don't know if I'm going to build a you know, when you basically wrap your room in chicken wire so it becomes RF free. I'm forgetting the name of that room, but you know what I'm talking about. But you know, you getting the vector network analyzer would be good enough. And I went out to QRZ and I see when I put the pointer over the email address, your email address comes up, Bernie. It's not the ARRL one, but I think in Ray's case it does. But that's okay. I'll check the LimeWork roster and get it off of there. Or Ray, you can just email me at the address that pops up on the QRZ page. But with that, I'm going to have to get off here and get going. But it was a pleasure talking to both of you. Just say goodbye to Alex for me if he comes back, or we'll call the cops in Yonkers, one or the other. K2YO, KC2TPK, and N2NNU, if you're out there. This is KC2RFN 73s, and I'll be clear on your final.
K73, Alan.
73 Allen, this is Bernie. We'll talk to you later. KCYO.
This is 2AZG. Did Allen leave?
He's alive. He made it.
Found it.
Alex, we were concerned about you running up and down 5 or 6 flights of steps. We know you have such a large house there, and then being lost in the wilds of the basement.
Thank you for the concern. So, Alan did leave?
Affirmative. He had a date tonight for dinner, so he had to go get cleaned up.
Okay. I think I heard another station. I will give him the mic immediately. Now, that other radio amateur that made that VNA with the screen, it's Delta Lima 1 Sugar November George. Delta Lima 1 Sugar November George. And they sell, there is an equivalent of QST in Germany. It's called Funk Amateur Magazine. And they're selling it as a kit too. So, 425 euros. With a screen, with everything, a very large screen. Okay, who was the breaker in?
It's KB2AZG.
Please go, KB2AZG. Go ahead.
And Alex. Yeah, I was just testing. I just repaired my microphone. I wanted to see how my audio was. The cable was moving around now, and hopefully I'm not losing anything, and I'm going in and out.
No, you're perfect. No problems whatsoever.
Okay, hi. Yeah, because it's a stretch in my van sometimes, and the head came out of the holder, and then somebody said I lost the audio yesterday, so it was a big McGilla. Anyway, I am going to say sign. I just wanted to check it. I'm going to go put it back in my van, so my trek into Brooklyn tomorrow is okay. All right, Alex, you have it back. Thank you very much. KB2AZG.
Okay, sounding great, as I said. Have fun in there. Not sure who is left here, so N2NNU. We'll listen who for whatever. Is Casey, are you, I believe, is here?
Yeah, I'm still here, Alex. KC2TPK, and the handle is Ray.
Okay, Ray. If you have a computer ready, handy, make a search for Delta Lima 1 Sugar November George. You may come up with that vector analyzer with a screen with everything.
Okay, actually I'm mobile right now. I got a pen for my wife and she can find paper. And let me pause a little bit. Yeah, by the way, you were my very second contact on 2 meters about a year and a half ago. So I was fascinated to hear about your DSP controlled radio or DSP radio. And of course, the vector network analyzer is very much a kind of a DSP type thing. In fact, probably use a DSPIS that they use. But anyway, so give me that reference again. My wife will try to write it down. Maybe give it in regular letters because she doesn't know phonetics. So back to you, Alex.
Okay. It's D like a dog, L like a lima or whatever for L. Like a lemur, number one, S like sugar, N like negative, and G like a George. Delta Lima 1, sugar, November, George. Copy?
Okay, she's got letters all over the page, but I think I'll be able to get... I'll be able to get the combination together. Okay. Yeah, very good. All right, thank you. I had a nice experience today with a couple of DX contacts right away on sort of a homemade 17-meter antenna. It's just that I was hoping it was going to be an all-band antenna with the antenna tuner, and the antenna tuner and everything was just miserable. Story of SWR, except for 17 meters and 24 megahertz band, 15 meters, I could do okay, but everything else was like wall-to-wall SWR. The theory didn't work. But I'll learn something from it, I guess. And with the DX contact from 17, it was a real motivation generator. So thank you, Alex.
K2YO, Alex, can you repeat that model number again?
The call sign is Delta Lima 1, Sugar November George. He started the whole wave of network analyzers, chip network analyzers based on direct digital synthesis chips from analog devices. That's all that is to it. Plus a little microprocessor inside. Not much.
QSL, got it.
KC2CMO.
KC2CMO, go.
Good afternoon. This is KC2CMO. I'm wondering how you're copying me because I'm having a little problem with my radio. I'm in the Bronx right now. Over.
Well, it depends on which street of the Bronx you are, because right now you are okay. You will not be in the Fort Apache area, right?
Negative on that. Right now I'm on Laconia Avenue. It's between Boston Road here. QSL?
Well, you are 100% copyable in the repeater.
Appreciate it. I appreciate it. Hey, I was just sitting here with my grandson, and I know my radio is giving problem because I've been off the radio for an awful long time, so I'm just trying to install it and get back there. Roger?
Okay, my friend. May I have your call, your name, please?
This is Danford. Danford, and it's KC2CMO.
I believe I can call you Don, right?
Yes, you can call me Dan. This is shortening for Danford. A lot of times I do say Don, but first contact, so I just give the full name here.
Okay, Don, we don't have to be so formal. This is a very informal, a very libertine repeater, although it is a closed repeater. So if you're going to call more than once, they're going to ask you for money, you know that?
That is the reason why I am always, that is all the time I am always, being listening here, because I know you got to do your poll.
Okay, Dan, okay. Your radio sounds fantastic.
I appreciate it. All right, I'll just have to, put it back into the right places, and I've been listening for a while before I, head out to, the Worship 20.
Okay. I had some telephones ringing here while you were talking, so I didn't catch the whole message, but I'm not sure if it was important or not. So, you be the judge, Don.
Appreciate it. All right, we're going to sign right now, and, I hope to talk to you again. It's KC2CMO. We clear.
Okay, Don. Have fun. Talk to you soon. Radio is perfect. KC2CMO and 2NNU. Bye-bye.
K2EJ, Eric, are you out there?
Disconnected. Connected. K2YO.
This is the WQVL repeater. Good evening.
Thank you. Okay, this is NY2H, and I'm Lou. And I'm not really signing in, but I was illustrating what Bernie was talking about. I typed break into EchoLink, and sure enough, you did hear my call. So I guess the system is working. Go ahead.
It sure is, Lou, and thank you for that demonstration. Okay, one last call.
Check after you finish, after a person finishes on Echo, like, wait 2 seconds before you pick it up, will you?
Yes, sir, Eric. And in your case, I did wait for a beep. Should I wait beyond some number of seconds beyond the beep, Eric? Go ahead.
The longer you wait, the less chance something bad happens.
And when we really get rolling to get these guys to wait 1 or 2 seconds beyond the beep or for the machine to thoroughly drop, it's not easy. But we'll try. One last call. Anyone else to sign into the TechNet, give me your call letters, a name, and the word yes at this time.
WS2N, Paul. Quick space report.
Very good, Paul. And Paul, do you have a deadline as to... we should carry the space report before some particular time because you have to get some shut-eye. Go ahead.
No, no, negative, no. Just fighting laryngitis here, so that's why it's going to be a short space report. Back to you, Dick.
Very fine. Okay, so one last time. What we've got so far is Wesley, Skyler, Jeffrey, and I think that's the only people who signed in tonight. Did I miss anyone? Give me your call letters and name at this time. Okay. Wesley's number one on the runway. Go right ahead with your question, Wesley. N2XJN, K2RIW in the TechNet.
K2RIW, N2XJN in the group. Question. You have two identical cords, and you run of them, put the winding on them. One of the coils has a 6 ohms and number of windings, regular way. The other one is you take the wire and you bend together, you put it parallel, but you don't cut the end. So actually self-canceling coil. And you make sure that the resistance is also 6 ohm. Question to you. How then the inductance of that coil will react? Would be lower, would be the same, would be higher, and what other properties you can mention about it? And to Andrea.
I'm pretty sure I'm going to need a repeat on... I'm going to need some further illumination on what you're asking, Wesley. What I heard was there are two cores, C-O-R-E-S, two magnetic cores. For the time being, I'm going to assume that they're toroid-shaped.
Coils, with it, yeah. The coils could be air coil, so it's not exist for ferromagnetic as of yet. That's the first scenario.
Okay, you have two air coil inductors. And you said each one is 6 ohms. Tell me what that means.
Yeah, let's say that the resistance is 6 ohms, the same diameter of wire, everything like that. The only thing is that the difference between first coil and the second coil is that the second one looks like a beefalo one, but is not cut at the end of it. So it's like a double wire, but it's not cut, so it's self-canceling. Back to you.
Okay. I'm wondering why you would wind an inductor with a wire that has so darn much resistance, 6 ohms of resistance. Maybe it's a very large number of turns of a very fine wire. Maybe that's where the 6 ohms is coming from. And when you're speaking of 6 ohms, you said resistance, and I presume you mean resistance, not inductive reactance. So there are two coils. Each one has enough wire, and the wire is thin enough that there is 6 ohms of resistance that you could measure with an ohmmeter on these two coils. One of them is bifuller wound. I'm a little bit confused by that because bifuller usually means there are two wires twisted together before you actually wind this coil. And I presume the coil is a solenoid-shaped coil. and now you're saying that one of them has some form of winding such that it is giving cancellation. You're going to have to give us a lot more words to make a mental picture as to what you mean by that. N2XJN, K2RIW.
K2RIW, N2XJN. Okay. Let's take two round thyroid coils, but they are air coils. So it's like a donut. One of the coils is winded with a regular wire of, let's say, thickness of number 30 of the wire. And when you measure the resistance of it is 6 ohm. Then you take exactly the same core, air core, and you put the coil that will also have a 6 ohm. But it's kind of beefy. That the only thing is that these wires are not twisted, that these wires are parallel. They parallel, and they are winded on that, and the end of this winding from one side is uncut. So it's like you fold the wire on two, and then you wind that winding. Back to you.
Okay. My understanding so far is that 30 gauge wire, enough of it to make 6 ohms of resistance, is wound in a air core toroidal manner. In other words, as if you were winding the wire on a toroid, but for the time being there was no toroid present. So you've got these leads wound in what I'm going to call a solenoid winding, but you've taken the whole axis of the solenoid winding and curved it around so it goes back on itself as if it was wound onto a toroidal core. Now there's a second winding. Is the second winding being wound on top of the first winding? I heard the word defiler, and I think you mean bifiler. And I'm wondering if there's only one wire of the second winding, what is it bifiler with? So there's a fair amount missing in my mind yet as to what you're asking. Is the second winding wound on top of the first winding? And the usual way of making a bifiler winding is you twist two wires together first, then wind them onto the core. But you didn't say those words, so I'm a bit confused. N2XJN, K2RIW.
K2RIW, N2XJN. Now, what I was talking is you have a one thyroidal in shape coil, and it's winded the way that you describe, and the other one is separate. It has exactly the same diameter. The only difference is that you took two wires together, or actually fold the wire, and you didn't twist it. You just put them in parallel, and you put the bifilar winding. And end of this, from one side, the end of this two wire is uncut, or is twisted together. So from both of the coils, you have two wires outside. And my question was, how the inductance would look like between these two coils? Would the second coil would be larger, smaller, equal, knowing that it's 6 ohms of the resistance in both of them? Back to you.
Okay, what I'm hearing so far now is there are two toroidal coils. One is 30 gauge wire, some number of turns, wound in air, but it's wound in such a way that it would look like it's being wound on a toroidal coil. It's got a starting and an ending of that single wire, 6 ohms of resistance, and some amount of inductance that we haven't yet described. The second toroidal coil is not wound with a single piece of 30 gauge wire. It is two parallel pieces of 30 gauge wire, wound the same way as the first. And I presume the first coil, coil number one, had some air spacing between the windings. Therefore, you had the ability to put two wires parallel, side by side, when you wound the second toroidal coil. And that second toroidal coil, let me drop.
So what I'm saying is, The only difference between these two coils is that the second coil is run exactly like the first one with a double wire, but the double wire at the end of one end is uncut or it's twisted, so the second double second coil with the double wire is actually also 6 ohms of the resistance and has also two ends as the first one. What I'm trying to get from you is the properties and difference between these two coils.
If I understand correctly, the second toroidal winding, I could start off with two parallel wires. Let me call them a red and green wire. They run parallel to each other. I wind them the same number of turns. I wind them in the same shape as the first toroidal winding, and now I'm only going to use the red wire input and output end and make a measurement, and I'm going to leave the green wire input and output end not connected to anything. Is that what you're asking? Go ahead.
In that case, if you have a red and green wire, two ends of that wire from one side are connected together, and two ends are available for you to make the connection work to whatever you want to. It's like, the thing is that if you make us the same amount of windings as the first coil, that actually you will have a double of resistance. So you got to have as many windings, so the second coil will have also 6 ohms of resistance. Do you understand that?
No, I do not. I've heard a lot of words, but I still don't have a complete picture. The second toroidal winding has two parallel wires, a red wire and a green wire. Now I'm going to wind it the same number of turns as the first toroidal winding. I'm going to wind it in the same shape. And you're talking about connecting and disconnecting, and you used a bunch of ambiguous words. Am I connecting the red wire to the green wire anywhere, that is not clear, at the beginning or the end? Is the red and green connected together? One possible way would be that the end of the red wire connects to the beginning of the green wire, but you didn't say those words. So, is the red wire and the green wire connected to each other on the beginning of the winding or the end of the winding? That's question number one. Question number two, when I make the electronic measurement of toroidal number two, am I connecting only to red? Am I connecting only to green? Am I connecting to both? And how are they connected? A lot of ambiguity here. I know you have a mental image of what you're saying, but the words, you have to draw a pretty clear picture to us over this radio beam in order to understand what you're asking. N2XJN, K2LIW in the TechNet.
N2XJN. Well, if you wind two wires in parallel, one is red, one is green, then you have, actually after you finish your winding, you have two ends of red-green and two ends of red-green. One is the end, one is the beginning. What you're doing is actually one of two ends, red and green, you twist together. Not the beginning of the red with the end of the green, so you're not actually making the coil longer. You just have two ends with the PFLR and you connect them together. It's like you're shorting them. And then you have two ends that were the beginning of the coil, let's say, to the other ends, and then you put your in meter and you try to measure the inductance. My question is, would the inductance be the same? Bigger, smaller, and what you can say about this coil?
Okay, I'm going to need a few more words to clear it up. Red and green wire parallel to each other. I start off with a red and green. I have the beginning. I hold on to those. I put them in a vise. I continue winding the same number of turns on the second toroid as the first toroid. After I've wound the second toroid with the red and green wire parallel to each other, at the end of the red and green winding, I twist the two together, and then I think I soldered them together. It's not clear. So
that is correct.
So the end is twisted together and soldered, and now you didn't say it, but I'm only going to be making a measurement from the beginning of the red wire, red wire to end of red wire. Am I going to make the measurement that way, or am I only going to be using the beginning of red and the beginning of green?
Beginning of red and beginning of green. You've got to make sure that you don't have the same amount of windings, because then you will not achieve 6 ohms. You want to have a 6 ohms in both of them, but one is bipolar, one is singular.
Now, that doesn't make sense. If there are two wires side by side, if either of those is bipolar, that means they're twisted together. You're saying one is bipolar and one is not. You can't do that.
No. What I said is one coil is regular way, two ends only, one wire. The other is double wire. The two ends of the end of that second coil, the reason red, you solder together. You have the beginnings red and green at the dead particle second coil, and you connect your meter.
Okay, when I connect the meter, if I'm connecting it from the beginning of the winding of red and the beginning of winding of green, if those are the two leads that go to the instrumentation, and if the end of red and the end of green get twisted together and soldered and connect to nothing, is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
Okay. If the same number of turns of wire and the same length of wire previously was 6 ohms on toroid number 1, I've now got twice as much length of wire. I've got the same length of wire of red, same length of wire of green. Won't I resistance-wise measure 12 ohms even before I measure inductance? Go ahead.
Okay, now we got it. You got to make sure that the number of winding on the dual coil, call it dual coil, has to be as many as you have the same resistance. So both coils, the dual one and singular one, will have the same resistance. Back to you.
Okay. In order to make the second toroid also measure 6 ohms of resistance, as the first toroid with 6 ohms of resistance, I can only do that is if the red wire and the green wire are each half the length.
Correct.
If they're half the length, are they the same number of turns on the toroidal core? Let's assume that there's a toroidal core made out of plastic. So,
if they're half of the length, that will be 50% of the windings, number of the windings on it, right? But the total length of the wire in first coil and the second coil will remain the same, no matter what.
Does the second toroid have half the number of turns of red wire?
That is correct, but it has double wiring, so that at that point, the first coil, in order to reach 6 ohm, has to have twice as much of the length. That means the double coil will have a double winding, but half 50% of the winding, but this, it appears for me that both of the coils has to have a total the same length. If you measure the half of the of the length of the bipolar coil, and with both of these actually winding on the second coil, then you will actually have the same length. Am I right?
I'm slowly getting the picture, and there's a lot more words that were required already. So the red wire plus green wire to total is the same length of overall wiring as toroid number 1.
Yes, no other way.
But I've got half the number of turns, so there's a number of differences between the two. But I think I see where you're going here. So with an ohm meter, if I followed your instructions correctly, with an ohm meter I will measure 6 ohms of toroid number 1, input to output, 6 ohms of toroid number 2, input to output. Toroid number 1 will have a certain amount of inductance when I measure it with a Wheatstone bridge, with a a network analyzer. There's many kinds of instrumentation I could use. So I'll measure a certain number of microhenries or nanohenries on coil number one. In the case of coil number two, because you've got, let me call them clockwise and counterclockwise windings as far as the way the signal goes down the red wire, hops over to the green wire, and then comes back. There's a kind of canceling going on. So if there was, if the two red and, if the red and green wire were extremely close to each other, so that there could be no leakage reactant between them, then yes, the inductance of toroid number two would be an extremely small fraction of the inductance of coil number one. In fact, coil number two, in theory, would have no inductance at all. You've now made a rather complicated dummy load resistor, and maybe that's the intention, to make a resistive dummy load which has essentially no reactants. Well, what would happen in the real case is, if you really did this, I'm going to make a guess, let me drop. Your first coil is going to measure, let me pick a number out of the air, 300 nanohenries. Your second coil is going to measure an extremely small fraction of that in inductance because of the cancellation. In theory, on paper, in toroid number two would have no inductance at all. If you really did that, because there's leakage between those two wires, there's going to be some inductance. And if you took the two wires that are parallel side by side, ran toroid number two the way you described, or twist them together for the total length, and then wound toroid number two, I believe you would get slightly lower inductance again on toroid number two if they were twisted. Because of the twisting process, not only are they closer together, but the leakage reactances around those turns do a little bit job, better job of canceling. So what you've discovered is a way of winding a coil, and the whole reason you wind the coil is because you want inductance, but you have found a way of winding the coil such that you get very little of the inductance capability. I'm pretty sure that's what would happen. It would be a beautiful experiment to run. I wonder if you've run that experiment, and I wonder what your motivation is. Maybe your motivation is to understand the way coils work, the way inductance is built up, and do you believe that this is a component that you could apply to a real circuit? N2XJM, K2LIW.
Yes, there is a component that applies to the real circuit. The only thing is that, for some strange reason, the inductance of that dual coil is twice as much as the inductance of the singular one. Knowing that the resistance is the same in both of the situations. Now, my question to you is, if, let's say, instead of air, you put any kind of ferromagnetic material inside, would that rule that you describe actually apply the same way that you said with that magnetic material, ferromagnetic material? Back to you.
Had I wound this toroid number two, my first winding, the red winding, X number of turns, at the end of that I splice it to the green winding, and winding the same number of turns in the same direction, in general, a well-made inductor, the total inductance is a function of the number of turns squared if they're all wound in the same direction. Your particular parallel red-green wire combination has the red wire, let's call it clockwise, the green wire being used in a counterclockwise manner. Therefore, it tends to cancel all of the inductance created by the first. In order for the inductance of a coil to be a function of the number of turns squared, you have to make the assumption that all of the magnetic lines of force created by the first winding is, or each individual turn, that all the magnetic flux is linking all of the turns. If you have that, then it follows the square law characteristic. Not all coils do that. But this counter-rotating technique that you're now describing with red and green is going to almost cancel, not completely. There's still going to be some inductance, but I'll be amazed if it's more than 5% of the inductance of toroid number one. So you've now got the resistance of that winding but you have very little of the inductance, and what would be your motivation for doing it that way? And I think you said you've got twice the inductance. Then I'm a little bit confused about how the winding worked, how it was really done. By the way, there's some balancing devices that use some of these techniques, but the one you're describing is an unusual one. Was it really twice the inductance on toroid number 2, N2XJN, K2RIW? Wait a second or two beyond the beep, please.
Comment.
Okay, person with comment. With N2XJN. Okay, we have somebody with a comment. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take some time, so you're going to be talking about different things, and I'm going to give you the exact, it's almost double. And in six different instances, with six different people, that strange effect was replicated. And yes, there is a real application for that, and that's what why I ask you. And also, if you have a ferromagnetic material, you will have exactly the same. That's why I said it's a self-canceling. So actually, the inductance will cancel itself. That's what you say, Dick. And don't you?
Yeah, if you wound it on a real toroidal coil, I'm pretty sure that the second toroid, red and green, would have an extremely small fraction of the amount of inductance of the first one. Are you saying that if you did it in air, you get one result, and if you did it on ferromagnetic material, you get a different result when you're measuring the ratio of toroid number 1 to toroid number 2? Is that what you're saying, Wesley? Go ahead.
No, I didn't try it by myself on ferromagnetic, but actually it appears that the effect is very much similar. And based on all knowledge, you're right. Based on practice, you are not. Back to you.
I got a question and maybe a comment about what's going on, Dick. WY to you.
B2M2Y, Jason.
WY to you. I think that's, I should know you very well. And Lou also. NY to you. Go right ahead first.
Okay, Dick, very good. Yeah, this is Mike, WY2U. I was just listening here in the background. I guess my first question would be, what frequency is he doing this measurement at? Because I'm wondering if, for example, he's too close, let's say, to where the original coil, you know, without the bifilar winding. If he's trying to do a measurement whereby that coil is close or, you know, getting close to the self-resonant frequency, the inductance that he's going to be measuring would be quite a bit higher than would be the case, you know, if it was at a lower frequency. And then on top of that, what he's doing is he's putting a second winding in like a bifilar set of turns, and that's going to introduce a large amount of additional per-turn capacitance, which is going to push the self-resonant frequency of that coil even lower. So you're quite correct. In theory, the inductance should cancel, but if he's doing this thing at exactly the wrong frequency, getting close to the self-resonant frequency of the coil, and that in tandem with the additional capacitance of the second winding, you might get into this situation where the inductance might seem to want to increase. And I'm just wondering if that's what's going on, Dick. Back to you. WY to you.
Very fine, Mike. That's Mike Cosma, a man who I think quite often serves as a consultant, electronic RF engineering consultant. And so as this combination of toroidal coils goes anywhere near self-resonant, you are going to get some peculiar characteristics. It might even be a way of making a so-called meta-material, a material that at first appears to not obey the normal rules for inductive reactants, capacitive reactants, and so on. You can get some crazy, with techniques a little bit different than this, you can end up with a step and repeat material which actually has a negative refractive index, and I've done a little bit of work on some of those. So I'm hoping that Wesley was nowhere near resonance. Before we go over to Lou and get his comment, what frequency do you believe you were about to, or you did use this technique? Has an actual physical measurement been made, Wesley? And do you believe, you know, what frequency, and do you think you were far away from self-resonance? N2XJN, K2RIW in the TechNet.
KZ2QIQ with a comment.
Go ahead, QIQ.
Glenn also recognized, but Wesley first, please answer those questions.
Okay, there were two coils leaning on the table, not connected to anywhere, only to the meter. And the only difference between these two coils was that one was bifilar with self-canceling, and the other one was just regular coil. Back to you.
Okay, once again, the question is, what frequency was the measurement? What was the difference in what you measured? Go ahead.
Well, the resistance of this coil was exactly 6 ohms. Now, the frequency of this particular coil, I have no idea. I have a friend who is a guru in electronics, and I'm communicating with him. He put these coils. He showed me on Skype. I saw physically the coil. I saw physically the meter. And I'm gonna show you exactly if I look at it, how much was one coil in millihenries and the other one. But the other one was twice. Now, I don't understand, after 20-something years, how could that be? Now, he made 6 different coils. 6 different coils. And he made 6 different diameters, but make sure that all of them are pair. And it repeated itself. Back to you.
Okay, so you don't know what frequency the measurement was made at. Roughly how large, physically, were these coils? Was the toroid an inch in diameter?
Okay, 3 inches.
So the toroid was 3 inches in diameter.
And how many turns?
God, I don't know.
Enough turns for 6 ohms of resistance at 30-gauge wire. That's a fair amount of wire, so quite a few turns. 3 inches in diameter is what I think you said. 10 centimeters, roughly, something like this. And you don't know what frequency was measurement. And you do know the number of millihenries, is that what you're saying? And the second coil, the bucking coil, had twice the number of millihenries of the first coil. The next question would be, can you tell your friend to slowly sweep the frequency up and down following Mike's suggestion to find out if resonance was taking place? If no resonance was taking place, then the inductive reactance versus frequency would be a somewhat linear curve when you plot it. If you're hitting resonance, that curve is going to start doing some very wild gyrations. So, do you believe your friend has the ability to sweep the oscillator up and down and remake those measurements to be sure resonance was not taking place? N2XJN, K2RIW.
Yes, I believe he has. He has all of the possible instrumentation. Now, when he showed it to me, I was just stunned. Back to you.
Yeah, almost all of us are jumping on top of each other here and not waiting for the right length of time. The next person with a question on this was Lou, N2YJC. Go right ahead, Lou.
Okay, good evening, Dick, and everybody on the net. I'm not no expert on this, but I did come across a coil like that. It was not a toroid shape. It had very few turns on it, pretty heavy gauge wire, and it was used as a notch filter to get rid of noise. And it was strange because it was the same type of winding where two wires were run parallel. The B sides were shorted together and the A sides were used in the circuit to pass current. And I'm pretty sure it was a specific frequency, and I have no idea what the frequency was, except it was a very low frequency, probably 5 kilohertz, but it was to get rid of noise at a particular frequency on a